All right, let me confirm. Jed, are you back with us?
I am.
Beautiful. To each of you and all of you, we are delighted that you're here for the Media Bids Power Hour, an educational opportunity that Jed and myself have been hosting every single month for the last decade plus. We give you tools, strategies, techniques, templates, news that will keep you on the leading edge of what's happening in our advertising media space. And, of course, we love fielding your questions, and we love the opportunity to be connected. As we get settled in, you'll always hear at the very beginning, we encourage you to close your office door, turn off any media or external noise best you can to really be able to focus on the points we're going to be covering. Always a recommendation to print off or pull off the key points that we're covering so you can make your notes. It's not an accident. We don't put something on your screen which would create many tasking or multitasking. Instead, all of the best adult educational research says the more notes you take, the more notes you make, the more that we transfer the knowledge. That's our coach and coaching approach rather than simply training and hoping that you get it. As we roll along during the course of this Media Bits Power Hour, you can hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, and we'll field your questions. We have pages of questions. We've consolidated them. We'll be working and weaving them in to the points we're going to be sharing with you, and we have lots of ground to share about ad media changes, friend or foe. Before we dive into those points, Jed, how about some opening words about what's cooking in the world of media bids, if you would, please?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you to Ernest. Looking forward to him sharing his thoughts on this interesting topic. I always learn a lot from Ernest, and I'm sure today will be no different. Thank you all for joining us. My name is Jed Gould. I'm president of MediaBids, and MediaBids is a company that is devoted to driving revenue to print publications. We work with over 10,000 print publications in the United States and Canada, and we're always looking to talk to more publications. So if you're not currently using us, we'd love to speak to you. If you are, thank you. MediaBids has sort of a different approach than conventional print companies. We talk to advertisers primarily about response, and we're always using tools to show advertisers that print can compete with other mediums. So we track the results of tens of thousands of ads every week, and then show advertisers how those ads are doing. We have found that by doing that we can paint a pretty good picture of how print performs, especially relative to other mediums. So I think this is a theme that'll probably come up later in the call, but we're very focused on using a lot of the online metrics that advertisers appear to enjoy so much, and applying them to print, and then showing advertisers how the performance in print can measure up to other mediums, and in many cases it measures up very well. So, again, thank you all for joining us, and I will hand it over to Ernest.
Beautiful, and always appreciate Jed, our working together. And for those of you who already work with MediaBids, you know the value that they bring, you know the additional revenue that they bring. And for those of you that have not, come into MediaBids.com, connect with Jed and their team, learn more about what MediaBids is doing, and you're going to hear actually Jed speak at a couple of points here today and weave in some nice nuggets for you to ponder, think about, pieces of presentations and teleseminars he's done more recently. He's going to weave in some of those key points for us. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I've been in the advertising sales space going on 3 decades, launched 3 of my own media publications and companies, and was also a leader in a $1 billion media group. So if you ever want to talk to me about what it means to launch a media group off a kitchen table in an entrepreneurial way, I understand that. We work with small, medium, and large teams, and we love working with leaders of all kinds in our space and sector. We've coached more than 2,000 advertising sales teams and companies in 11 time zones around the world since 1995, and it's been a wonderful journey. We love to say the hotter the kitchen, the more we want to help you. In other words, the biggest challenges or the opportunities or the transitions. Today we're talking about changes and adapting to those things. Those are the teams and leaders we love to work with. And lastly, our flagship, every single Tuesday, we have an Ad Sales Academy. You get an audio message on Monday focused on a specific point every Tuesday of every week. We're coming up on almost 200 weeks of working together. We help you win, taking what you hear today and other examples like this and literally utilizing it and working together every single step of the way. And there are a couple points embedded in here today, especially related to media kits that directly relate to and inspire what we're talking about. So, Jed, we're talking about ad media changes, and the subject is friend or foe, right? I mean, the changes that are happening, are they helping us win? You know, is it good news? Is it bad news? Is it somewhere in between? We're going to be talking about that. We believe that big picture, the more that you're deploying the strategies you talk about today, all of the news coming out is our friend all the way around. But the key is you have to stay current with the trends. If you and your team are not, we can tell you right now, it's not fun to be on that side of the pointed sword on the other side. It is foe, okay? And if you see it as that, well, stay tuned. That's why you're here for our teleseminar and the things that we're going to share. Let's just kind of give you an overview before we dive into our first point to say, you know, the status of media in general is very fast moving. Jed and myself across Twitter, the things that we share in our academies on Tuesday, the things that we post, the things that we comment here in our teleseminars are examples of that because it's moving so quickly that what we share today in another 3, 4, 5 months, it's already out of date or there's new news and there's new things that are happening. And therefore, you, like we do, have to stay on the pulse of it in order to be able to translate it back into what does this mean to me? What does it mean to my company and our positioning? And then taking it out, what does it mean to my advertisers, my ad agencies? How do I take it to the market? How do I go out and ensure the message and the drum, the sound of the drum is being heard? Because if you are not driving it, it ain't happening. Which is not exactly proper English, but you get our point. It is not happening. It will not happen. It ain't happening. All right? So that part is key. Your destiny is in your hands is what we're really saying here in the spirit of that. Just a couple of, I'm going to share kind of a couple of snippets of things that we've seen more recently related to the overall status because it relates to this piece called change and kind of the velocity. Jed, you know, some of the things like, for example, 50% of the global digital spend is happening or being spent between what? Google and Facebook on the other side. Half the digital spend right there, about another 2% more going into to LinkedIn. Things that we're bumping into, as you know, programmatic buys, you know, you did a wonderful presentation on that. How about some of the throttling issues that are going on Facebook, ad blocking software, native ads we've talked about here in some of our programs. How about the fact that if we really step back and we're honest for just a moment, Google, Facebook, and Apple, right? I mean, Apple driving the smartphones on that side, those three are becoming the three ways that the pipes of media and news is coming to us or not. And we have to recognize that that's kind of and that's obviously a broad stroke, but we have to realize that at this moment, those three are driving a significant part of what's going on. Facebook determines the feed. Google, obviously, their algorithms determines what we see. When we say, I'm looking for a pink-headed giraffe in Boise, and what comes up is driven by their algorithms. And, of course, Apple deciding what we do and or do not get as it relates to our vehicle on that side. Then we take the other side. You know, almost 3 billion readers around the world still get their news in print. How about more recently, teens more interested in Snapchat versus texting. Think about that. How that sort of morphs Snapchat. I keep looking at my own children going, can you explain that Snapchat one more time? Show me. They carried me into Twitter. They carried me into Instagram. Now we're into Snapchat. I go, I don't, again, understand. You send it, it's there, and it disappears. Explain that one more time. They keep looking at me. And right. I love to have my 20-somethings make me sweat. You know, show me how that works. And I'm always curious and I'm always engaging. But now here I am talking about Snapchat and some of the news and stories about Snapchat being more valuable than text. It's like me sending you a text yet saying, are we meeting you today? You miss it, and then it's gone. It's like, no, I sent your message. You go, oh, yeah, I can look at my phone because you sent it this morning or you sent it yesterday. It's there. Again, you know, but listen. We don't have to make the news. We can just report the news and just say the teams believe that Snapchat is more valuable. But yet also related to this piece, and let's tie this part into kind of the opening comments today. We had this piece called Print is Still Rocking and Delivering, and you have three studies that you recently shared. So say some words about that, just as it relates to the velocity and volume of change and news and so forth before we dive into our first point, okay?
Sure. I mean, what Ernest, all the points that Ernest brought up, right, obviously have direct impact on print and how print is perceived to perform, you know. And one of the things that that we do here at MediaBids, and we run into all the time, and I imagine most of the people on the phone run into as well, is when you're talking to an advertiser, and an advertiser is they have an expectation of how print is going to perform for them. And very often that expectation is not based on any sort of real data. It's based on the same kind of news reports that Ernest was quoting a minute ago. You know, it's things like, you know, half of advertising revenue in the world is spent, currently spent on, you know, Google and Facebook. It's on the fact that, you know, they see their friends, they see how their friends consume news, or the fact that they no longer, you know, get a subscription to a newspaper. It's based on all of these sort of, you know, observations that we make, but it's not usually based on data. And some interesting studies came out which show the effectiveness of print and sort of the how it performs against other mediums. And, you know, one of the huge advantages that print has, it's both an advantage and a disadvantage, is that it's not a medium which is easy to pass over, right? It's a medium that if you're going to read an article, you're going to spend some time doing it. Or even if you're going to page through the newspaper, right? It's an activity which is a solitary activity. You're focused on it, as opposed to a lot of the things that we do on our phones and our computers, right? Which tend to be in all directions. And if you've ever been around, you know, I've got younger kids, and if you've ever been around them, I mean, it appears that they can do about 7 things on their phones at one time. You know, it's very different. And what these studies point out is that, you know, that has an effect on the value of advertising. For example, one study shows that running newspapers along with other mediums triples the ad effectiveness of the other medium. So the fact that, you know, that people are seeing it in print, even if it's a relatively small number, right, as compared to, let's say, an AdWords campaign, but the people who see it in print are much more likely to act, they're much more likely to buy, and they're much more likely to become long-term customers. There are some pretty interesting stats that were done around this study, saying that, you know, for some sectors, like, for example, finance, a campaign's effectiveness increases by 5.7 times if print is part of the ad buy. It increases 3 times, so it's 3 times more effective for a sector like travel if print is included in the ad buy. 2.8 times for retail, 1.7 times for automotive. These are all stats which are done through large surveys and appear to be, you know, appear to have some you know, appear to have some logic behind them. That's just one, and we can give you access to all of these. They're on our blog, but we can also include a link when we send out the email following the teleseminar. The other thing which we see a lot here at MediaBids, because we track all the ads, another survey I'm going to mention sort of bears out, is that readers that that plan to readers take action as a result of reading print ads, much more so than any other medium. You know, for example, in this one study, and it's focused on magazine readers, there were 61% of the people who read an ad took some form of action. And now, that's a sort of preposterously high number because, you know, we see with our own, you know, in our own, with our own data that, the number for, you know, for newsprint and sort of across all media is probably, you know, is probably more like 10%. But even, you know, regardless of sort of how you define action, it's obvious that more people who see a print ad are going to do something, right? Either seek more information or make a phone call or make a purchase or save the ad or try to find out more in some way about the potential purchase. There's more people take those types of actions as a result of print than they do online. Personally, I think it's because of the type of medium that it is. So 61% of the people, as I mentioned, took some form of action. 22% considered a purchase as a result of seeing an ad. 21% considered, you know, had a more favorable opinion about the advertiser. 16% took steps to gather more information. 14% referred the service. 13% visited the website. And that's a huge number there for me. And it's the first time that I've really seen that number kind of bared out, you know, sort of put a value on it. Because we always wonder, right, when we're running print ads, how many people who are seeing, you know, who knows, it could be an Omaha Steaks ad, right? You know, how many people who see an Omaha Steaks ad are saying to themselves, you know what, I forgot to clip the ad for the number, but I think I'm going to go and visit the website because I liked what they were offering. Maybe I can find the same thing online, right? And so that 13% number is a big number, and it's something that, you know, if I were out there selling to merchants who were also using online marketing, that I would absolutely mention. It also kind of ties into, you know, the previous study that we just mentioned, which stated that print advertising increases the effectiveness of all, you know, of all marketing, right? So it makes sense that, you know, someone who sees an ad in print is more likely to seek information online and really turned on to the idea of buying the product or visiting the website as a result of a print ad, but they didn't take whatever action the print ad specifically wanted them to. And this idea of attribution, right? Like this idea of attribution is becoming a huge, huge, you know, problem for marketers. For any company that we deal with, you know, the idea of attribution and how do you know where a customer really came from, whether it's kind of first generation, where they came from they're responding to directly from an ad, or whether they see an ad in a newspaper or a magazine, and then they maybe see something online, and as a result of seeing it in the newspaper or magazine, they're more likely to click on that link that they see online. I mean, those are the kind of things that are really going to come to the forefront in the next few years. Because it's become so difficult for marketers to get true attribution on any response. So, you know, and what these studies are showing is that print is having a significantly positive impact even on other mediums within these markets, maybe mediums that are difficult to, you know, that don't really give credit to print, maybe the way that they should, but it's happening. I'm sorry, did you want to jump in?
No. You're rolling. I just want to say to all of you, you're listening to Jed, you're listening to myself. We're talking about, you know, these are the trends. And if there was a magic wand to be able to capture and gather all this, there's not. Let's agree. Jed, myself, we've maybe 50 combined years in around media and advertising. There's no shortcut. All of us are working harder to stay current with what those trends are, which sort of leads us, Jed, into our first point and to talk about, you know, the changes in print and digital, right? And how are we adapting? And, you know, as we sort of think about what's happening in your particular space, you have to kind of look like at the double word in Scrabble. You have to think about, you know, what are the big changes? Like we kicked off talking about Google. We'll talk some more about that. Facebook, throttling, you know, ad blocking, all these pieces. Then you have to take the double word and you have to look at your specific sector and how is that being impacted within your sector and how do you take that news and make it work for you. And so that's the first piece that we want to share, that we believe that do-it-yourself, the DIY days are over. Of, you know, you go out to an advertiser and they say, oh, I'm doing it myself. I have 10,000 likes on Facebook. Oh, I'm doing it myself. I'm sitting on Twitter. Oh, we're doing it. You know, we don't need your ad campaign. We've maximized our SEO or our pay-per-click. Or, you know, the days, it's gotten much more complex. And when you hear the word throttling, this is, we were in a client meeting this last couple of days yet, and we were talking about it. I said, do you understand that you have to kind of read the news about what Facebook is doing? This is like the third wave of throttling. And for all of you, just to clarify, when Facebook was $50 a share and they first said the word throttle, their stock jumped to 70. And today it's sitting at 120. Every time they say throttle to Wall Street jumps up and down and pours even more money, and the value of Facebook keeps screaming along. By the way, it was only a minute ago they were $18. They had literally were failing and struggling to have Wall Street understand their model, especially for the first 12 to 18 months. So why would you say that you should be dancing a jig? You know, these are the changes that are coming our way. We believe that every time Facebook says we're throttling, it means that your advertisers are getting what? Less and less impact and results. All right? And so there, and then when you see what's happened with LinkedIn on the B2B side, where they've nearly decimated their platform, then you look to see what's happened with Google. Let's talk about Google just for a second. On their pay-per-click side, there used to be 3 listings at the top and another 6, 7, 8 down the right-hand side. So there was kind of a way, Jed, to sort of be, you know, at the top, but there was about 6 spaces to do it. Today, they scrunched it down to what? 3 at the top and 3 at the bottom. Why? Because that's more mobile-friendly. All right, so when you do a search and say, I'm looking for a blue kangaroo in Boise, you get your 3 ads, then you get your maps, and then you get your organic, and then you get 3 more. And the change along those ways, that's another example where it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher for advertisers and even ad agencies to deploy the successful strategies, which means it comes back to you and your team to say, well, look, we have a captive audience. We have our website. We have our Facebook footprint. We have our e-newsletter. We have the web ads. We have the tracking that validates all that we're doing. We have that fully cooked for you. That's why the news of what's happening with these changes are incredibly positive for you and your media solutions, because advertisers can no longer do it themselves, and we think that that's extraordinary. But here's the comma in that sentence. The comma in the sentence is, but it's only as good as you're feeding that back out. It's only as good as you're feeding that back out to your agencies and your ad buyers and the media teams and educating your sales team. Because if you're not doing that, all of these changes are foe, not friend, period. That's the subject today. But if you are doing those things, then you are not only eons in front of your competitors, but you're guiding your advertisers, and they're coming to you to look for your insight, your advice, and your thought leadership. These are the things that we cover very specifically how to deploy in our Power Hour Tuesday Academy. These are the things that we've been working on with our Academy members related to this and the update and the importance of updating our media kits consistently with a page talking about these big picture trends. When we say to our Academy members on Tuesday, you know, here are the things you want to be including in your media kit. These are the key articles that are talking about what's happening in Facebook, what's going on with Google, what's happening with LinkedIn, so that advertisers can see you're watching the big picture trends. And on the next page are the most recent trends related to the space and sector, which you're constantly updating. And you might say that goes in a media kit rather than, you know, in a newsletter. Well, it goes everywhere. It goes in our newsletter, which goes out to advertisers, prospective advertisers and agencies. It goes into our Twitter feed. It goes into our media kit so that we embed that right into our presentations so we're showing our leadership role. So these are the things that are absolutely key. But, you know, but even something as simple as social media, Jet, you know, an advertiser will say, oh, we're covering all of our social media. And you pause and say, really? Because we've run your social media through our internal 22-point checklist. And based on the things that we see, your last post on Twitter was blank 6 months ago. Your last update on Facebook was 4 months ago. In fact, we don't even see a comment in the last 90 days. You know, these are the kinds of things to be prepared for. If you're going to take these changes that are coming at us and make them your friend, then you've got to do the research in terms of the social media and the prep going in. You have to debunk the fact that, you know, that an advertiser says, my SEO is airtight. And if you say, I guess so, then you might as well walk yourself out of that meeting because, frankly, that is a shift that is your foe. That's not your friend. But if you actually have done your prep for that meeting, you actually know whether or not they're getting SEO or not. We had a group reach out to us just in the last couple of days, Jed, and we got to chatting about their site and who their competitors are. And we did an analysis. We said, look, you have 15 key competitors. Of those, you have five of those that have more than 10,000 pages. Those are elephants in the room. You need to know that's fiercely competitive. By the way, the remaining 10 minimum have an average of 500 or more pages. Your website's 28 pages. So when you say you want an SEO strategy, I have no confidence that either my team or our work are going to walk on water and push you in front of websites of 10,000 pages, let alone sites that have 500 pages. If you can't talk to advertisers like that, if you don't know what's happening in the space and sector, then these changes are not your friend. They're foe. All right? How about the fact to know what the pay-per-click costs are as part of the research for this same project? We now know that the pay-per-click in that category is $6 to $13. Do you know what the pay-per-click per category that you're selling into? Now, recognize, for those of you that are in your niche or niches, you should have this cold. It's all day long. For those of you that have more general media, newspapers and magazines that aren't tightly sectored or tight to the niche or niche, then you've got to work on the big categories and know these absolutely cold so that you can talk to them about the cost per click, about the conversion from those clicks, about the ad results, about the case studies. All of these pieces weave in. And if your head is spinning right now, it might be. Jed, we're covering a lot here, but this is the world that we live in. We wish, Jed, we could boil it down. In the old days, you worked for the newspaper, you sat on your desk, you thought what about you were having for lunch, and the phone rang all day. All right? Those days are over. We're working harder, Jed, than ever, right? Is that a fair statement?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
It's, I think, definitely.
Right?
It would be nice if everything else went away, right? But it's here to stay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what you were saying, Ernest, is, and it really, you know, a lot of, I think, the conversations that I have anyway with advertisers, you know, a lot of the details and data about about other mediums, you know, it is really easy to find in one regard, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense that, you know, it's very easy to get an AdWords account and then just put in keywords that you know your advertisers are using and up pops the amount that you need to pay to be number one. Mm-hmm. And so that it becomes a pretty easy calculation to figure out, you know, about how much they're spending per click. Then you want to try to, you know, do like, you know, 3 minutes of research and figure out about how many times, you know, about how many clicks they get. And then once you figure out how many clicks they get, you know, then you can figure out what their monthly budget is, for example. And when you figure that out, then you can go to them and you say, you know, how's that $20,000 you're spending on Google working out for you? How many customers did you get from it? You know, because one of the mm-hmm. problems with, you know, one of the things that's a challenge for print when you're talking to advertisers about print is is converting, you know, is getting people to understand that the actions that they're paying for online, whether it be, you know, whether it be a click on Facebook or a view on Facebook or a click on AdWords or whatever it may be, those actions, it feels really good, right? It feels like, how could this possibly not pay for itself? I mean, I'm spending, you know, I spent $100 today and I got 50 people to come to my website, right? How could that be bad? But the numbers and the conversion rates are so shockingly low online. You can't overestimate just how poorly a lot of these mediums perform. And so until you start delving into the numbers and you show your advertisers those numbers, you know, I don't think that it really dawns on them that you know, we're not comparing apples to apples here. You know, we're comparing one medium with, you know, with the survey we talked about earlier, right, with a 41%, you know, rate of doing something, right? I mean, there's not a website out there, there's not an advertising medium out there with a 4%, you know, rate of doing something, let alone 40. So the numbers are dramatically different. You know, and you just, you know, but the way that a lot of these internet mediums are set up, they feel foolproof, right? And they feel very, very safe.
No, you're absolutely right. And let's pause here and just weave in. Jed is also confirming what we're talking about. But again, here, you know, the first half of our program here today, and recognize that if your head is spinning and you're in the media space, you pause and say, so how? What is it like for advertisers on the other side? Frankly, it's daunting. They have an unlimited array of solutions and media plans, and you, only you and we, bring what? Calm to the chaos. You've got to digest it, put it into a simple to understand form, explain what it means, and be able to navigate going forward. And when you're doing that, you're whistling Dixie, and if you're not, then this conversation of friend versus foe, it's not your friend, it's a foe, meaning it's a challenge. And rather than winning, you're struggling on the other side. Let's field a couple of just laser questions, because some we've been working and weaving in here. Melinda in Texas says, can we make money in print these days? We positively, absolutely. And if you listen to Jed, what he's covered here today, plus prior teleseminars, he's talked about sophisticated ad agencies literally come to media bids and say, for $20 or $25 or $30 a lead, we'll pay you for print. And we'll give you pennies, dollars, a couple of dollars, $2, $3 for digital. Make no mistake, Melinda, print is here. It is rocking, and it is delivering a very pre-qualified lead, no matter what the media says. Even my 20-something, Jed, I was speaking about Facebook. We were having this very conversation about print and digital, and he said, Dad, you're right. I see all of the ads rolling by, you know, in my feed, but, you know, I rarely, if ever, click on them. I said, do you ever buy anything? He goes, you know, maybe once a year. I said, that's exactly the issue. There, it's sort of the secret of the digital side, or frankly, the Sasquatch, you know, of digital, that it really isn't delivering the quality of leads and results, Jed, as you well know. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And the thing that's hard for print to combat is just the unbelievable staggering numbers of online. So there's no way to compete with circulation versus page views, or circulation, you know, print circulation versus how many people, you know, do a search. I mean, it's just the numbers are just staggering, but ultimately advertisers shouldn't care about numbers. They should care about results. And that's where some of the stuff we just mentioned comes in.
Absolutely. So Melinda, we hope that helps you and others. Mike in Kansas speaks about, you know, should we be focusing more on agency business? Mike, it depends on your audience. It depends on your advertisers. Agency business is great. It's a whole different kettle of fish, but we're going to tell you that the things we're talking about today, you have to both own it and know it cold. Your media kid has to present it. You have to be a thought leader out in front, and we do a lot of work on Tuesdays in our Power Hour Academy about this. So don't know whether to, you know, or not your model fits around that. Send a follow-up note if you'd like us to take a look at your site or speak more specifically. Bottom line is, yeah, we love agency business, but the key is, are you ready for it on one side? And then is your do your media solutions provide a valuable solution for their average, you know, for their clients? And then lastly, Clay in Mississippi asks, which ads work best in free publications and specifically free? Jed, I don't know if you have, I don't know, any data or comment on Clay's question.
Sure. So the free publications are in what we find is free publications more than any other type of publication are specifically bound, really follow the demographics of their geographic area, right? So unlike a daily newspaper where it's kind of self-selected who's going to subscribe and the type of person who's going to subscribe, you know, the both the good and bad about free publications are that they are put out there and they seem to follow the demographics of the area pretty directly. So if you live in if you have a free publication that's in a wealthy area, you know, there are certain types of products that, you know, that appeal to wealthier individuals than if you live in an area that isn't wealthy. I think the biggest mistake that free publications make when they're thinking about the type of advertising is that they don't acknowledge the fact that they are serving the people that are living right around where they're distributing it. very often, you know, there's free publications who want to be for wealthier individuals. But maybe the people picking it up and maybe the people living in those areas are not wealthier individuals. You know, I mean, I don't know how many, you know, Mercedes-Benz get sold by a free publication that is, you know, picked up at a 7-Eleven or something. I mean, I think that it's a different kind of experience. So I think that if you can acknowledge that, and that's not necessarily bad, right? It's not necessarily bad that your readership is not is not buying Mercedes-Benz. Is that what is bad is if it, or what makes it hard is if you try to sell, you're trying to sell the wrong product to the wrong audience. And so by acknowledging your audience, right, and by acknowledging the fact that that you are, you're serving these types of people, they're going to be more successful with their advertising. You know, I just wanted to mention one thing about the previous question, the agency question.
Yeah,
I mean,
please,
one of the problems with agencies is that all of the stuff we just talked about, right, all of the things that Ernest suggested that you do in terms of finding out about, you know, your potential customers' online spend, and you know, comparing the types of results that you think that they might be getting online to what an ad in your publication costs. You know, all of those things become much more difficult to do with an agency in the middle. Has been my experience that anytime you have an agency who is representing a client, almost all the time, they do not want you to think about anything. They just want you to give them rates, give them, you know, a deal, whatever it might be. But they are under the impression that they should really be the only ones who are thinking about their clients' marketing as a whole. And there are exceptions to this. I'm sort of speaking generalization. So I would say that you're inherently going to be less successful if you just have a strategy of going after agencies, because you can't bring anything to the table other than the basics of what you do, right? You can't bring anything to the table. You can't give them an argument, for example, about, you know, how your publication performs relative to online, you know, and keywords that their client might likely use. You really can't do any of that. And even if you do, you're never sure that it's making it to the right person. Never. Right? Because that agency is always going to have they're always going to be the gatekeeper of what information ultimately gets to the client. So a lot of the stuff we do a lot of stuff with agencies, but our best customers end up being companies who don't use agencies because mm-hmm. we can talk to them. Right, we can talk to them, and we can explain what we do, and we can provide some value other than just, you know, this is what it costs. I think that mm-hmm. you know, you don't really want to spend. I wouldn't go out of my way to try to cultivate agency business.
Hey, I love that piece, Jed, and you are right. It is a slippery slope. It's one of those be careful what you wish for. Sometimes it feels like they're the mother load. Gee, if I had 10 agencies and all their clients, I could run $10 billion in ads. And your points are valid. You know, whenever you go into a presentation, you have that wonderful bell curve, right? 20% get it, 20% never get it, right? And then you got 60% in the middle. That if you come in thoroughly prepared, who knows what, you know, your comment about a Twitter feed that hasn't been updated in 3 months might jar. Then I go, what? I thought I had it dialed in. Or no one's ever stopped me in a media presentation. Or who knows that the prep that we might know about the pay-per-click, for example, or that we've done some SEO prep research to see whether that plumbing company or that, you know, flower shop or that RV dealer is really being seen or not. I mean, to your point, Jed, 20% of the agencies know and get it, 20% don't care, and then 60%, hopefully, we slip in a nugget and they pause and go, what did you just say? What was that comment? Hang on, you know, I wasn't, you know, and all of a sudden they opened up. But your point is well taken, Jed, that, it, you know, there are those that will completely shut the door, some that will never open the door, and hopefully others that will pry it open and we can slide in. Let's continue. These are great, great, great questions, and we hope that you're enjoying the sort of free spirit of Jed and myself bantering with you, fielding your questions. We'll continue to take any questions, just to reply to the confirmation that brought you here, or simply an email to Ernest@powerhour.com. My team is pulling those in, sorting them, and we've got a whole bunch more that we hope to tuck in before we wrap up here at the top of the hour. Let's talk about the second of the 3 points we promised to cover, sort of talking about upfront ad expectations, right? And Jed, you touched on some of those points. You know, what is key to the advertiser? You know, what are they focused on? And Jed, you are completely correct. Being able to speak to advertisers rather than through agencies, holy smokes. I mean, that's when we can really talk about that. And we also want to talk about what are they measuring and how do they measure and have we actually seen their reports? Have we actually seen what it is that they're measuring? And certainly the importance, Jed, as we know, of the phone tracking, phone calls, the length of calls, where they're from, the recording of those calls, which is a coaching component, you know, the measuring of their Google Analytics, number of clicks, number of forms, number of leads converted, and then that takes us down to the next piece. You know, what do we really know about, you know, closing ratios? We had an entire Academy Tuesday, Jed, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We talked about, you know, we used the example of an RV dealer. You know, what's the most profitable RV, you know, that's sold? Is it a new or used, for example? What's the average price of a new versus used? How long from the time that an ad is read, the contact is made, and the first visit is made to an RV dealer before they actually buy? How many times will they come back before they buy? How many dealers will they see before they decide to buy from you, right? And then how many referrals will they give you? You need all of those touch points to understand the expectations in the ads. Jed, if a RV dealer has 100 calls this month, you and I would go, so what does that mean? Is that good news? You know, are those 100 buyers because they buy 2 years from now? For some of you that, for example, are in the senior living space, right? You know, you go out, you're working with mom and dad, they're getting a little older, they're looking at maybe an independent apartment. Some of the buy cycle, Jed, is 3 and 5 years out. 3 and 5 years out. So you bring in 100 phone calls to a senior living facility, you know, or should know or need to know that those are leads, but they won't convert for 3 to 5 years. So is it possible to be fired in the next 30 days because you didn't drive revenue? Of course not. Okay, the RV example, Jed, is sometimes that big purchase or, you know, is an ancillary or extra purchase. You know, who is actually spending $50,000 or $70,000 or $370,000 on an RV is a pretty unique audience from that perspective. And then, of course, how are all of your competitors, other media channels, how are they doing from that perspective? And then, Jed, say a few words. I always love when you talk about, you know, sort of ad sizes and tied to ad results and stats. And, look, I know there's an entire seminar related to that, but bottom line is there are a few nuggets that you know, might share and that you know definitively tied to ad and ad responses. So how about just capsuling a few of those for us here today?
Sure. I mean, you know, caveat to this is, you know, this is based on, you know, on data that we generate, and it's across, you know, in the course of a year, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of ads. I mean, I think close to 700,000. You know, we track the data on the phone calls, and then we try to make, you know, these sort of grand pronouncements. And you know, and there's often factors that are involved that we can't measure, like you know, edit, like where it is, where the placement is editorially and stuff. But just basically, you know, we find that. One of the things that happens with print very often is that response grows for the first four insertions. So every insertion, it grows usually by about 20%. And then once it hits that plateau, it begins after four ads, after four insertions, it generally grows at somewhere between, you know, depending on the product and luck, I guess, between about 2-5%. Right, and it'll just keep growing, and you know, and based on time of year, it might, you know, it might stop growing, it might even go down a little bit. But one of the things which is really incredible about print is that it almost never goes down more than about 3-4% per insertion. So, in other words, once a client of yours starts running ads, after they've hit about four insertions, that's about where they're going to be. They're going to continue to tick upwards very slowly in terms of response. But the other thing which is interesting is it never really drops off. And I don't really understand why. We have some products we've been running in some publications for, I mean, literally probably 12 consecutive years, and we've never seen them drop below, you know, that initial level that we hit after, you know, after those first insertions. So fatigue, which you hear people in radio and television talk a lot about, doesn't appear to be as prevalent in print, even in small publications. You know, this is true for, you know, 5,000 circulation, 10,000 circulation publications, as well as, you know, 100,000 circulation publications. So it's the fatigue doesn't seem to be as much of an issue. In terms of the actual ad, and you know, people on the call aren't gonna like this, but we don't see an enormous difference between color and black and white. We see a big difference when we're trying to sell food. so for example, Omaha Steaks ads in color do dramatically better than Omaha Steaks ads in black and white. That's not that surprising, right? Or a flower ad does better in color than it does in black and white. But the difference between color and black and white in terms of response doesn't appear to be enormous. It's slightly better for color, like maybe 5%, but it's not dramatically better. In terms of ad size, you know, we do get better results with full pages than we do from anything else. However, we don't, you know, half pages are not 50% less than full pages, and on down the line. And the interesting thing about this is that if you have any client who's interested, who's tracking response and who's interested in response, one trick that we use all the time that works really well is run a display ad and a classified ad. Because for whatever reason, there appears to be different audiences that read display ads and classified ads. We get responses from classifieds because we can see the phone numbers that are coming in. We get responses from classifieds that have never responded to a display ad, even if the display ad has been running for years. And that minor amount of space that's being devoted to the classified oftentimes is able to take the entire, you know, the combination, the display and the classified, and, you know, and move it up, right? Move the response up to levels that the display itself can't really, you know, wouldn't do on its own. So even though the lowly classified ad, right, might be worth, you know, three or four qualified responses per insertion, and that can make a big difference over the course of a month or the course of a client's contract if they got, you know, 10 more qualified responses as a result of you giving them or giving them cheap, you know, cheaply, inexpensively, a classified ad. Because there does appear to be a different type of audience that reads classifieds in many cases. Let's see, what else do you want me to talk about? It's part science and part art, right? I mean, a lot of times with these things, you think you know why ads are doing well or not doing well, but it's not a open and shut case in a lot of cases. Every publication is slightly different, and the readership of every publication is slightly different. But the main thing is that for the people on the call who are dealing with, you know, one or a smaller group of publications, you know, to be able to test it, right, to be able to say, look, here's a vein of gold, right? Here's, you know, we know for whatever reason, and we're not sure why, we know we can sell mattresses. Right, we do well with mattresses. We get a lot of calls with mattresses. We, you know, as opposed to pizzas, right? For whatever reason, we're not doing as well with pizzas. You know, if you're able to identify these things, then you can really try to capitalize on them, because you can find other advertisers with the same types of who are trying to attract the same types of people. One of the things that we've been very, very surprised in positive ways with some advertisers, and very surprised in negative ways on others. I mean, you know, ADT Home Security is a perfect example of an advertiser that we've never been able to get much response from, despite the fact that almost everyone who gets a publication owns a home. In many cases, they're exactly the right customers, but we've never been able to generate a lot of response for ADT Home Security. So you're going to find advertisers who don't work for you for reasons that you can't explain. And then by the same token, you're also going to find advertisers who work very, very well for reasons you're not entirely sure of. The main thing is being able to track it and being able to take that data and make assumptions going forward and share it with advertisers, right? Because, you know, Ernest talked a lot about, you know, Facebook and Google, and the one thing that they do so much better than print is they give the user the data, right? And even though Ernest is right that the days of a small business effectively doing it themselves, doing their own online marketing themselves, are probably over, it doesn't matter in some ways because they still believe they can, right? because when you go on those sites and you play and you play around with it, boy, it sure feels good, right? It feels like you know what you're doing, and it feels like you have everything you need. And you know what? You're all, before you know it, you know you're doing it, and you know, and that's a tough thing to combat. So to the extent that publications can provide data and provide information and provide results information, you can't depend on your advertisers to do it, right? There's no more true thing has been said in this teleseminar than you cannot depend on your advertisers to come to you and say, hey, that ad worked well, right? You have to provide it to them. Provide it to them, then you know, then good things will happen.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and that is really the state of the state, and that is what today is really about. Today's conversation and today our teleseminar, Jed, is all about, you know, ad changes, friend or foe. Which side of the, you know, coin are we on? Which
Is our glass half full? Is it half empty? Let's finish up around the bed in the last point that we promised to cover. And I just wanted to acknowledge there were a couple of questions I just wanted to share. Sam in California talking about some of the trends of digital and print. You've been hearing those things you've been talking about. Mark in Massachusetts asking about measurements and what do we need to improve. You heard some of that from Jed as well. We'll talk a little bit about the standard for selling print and digital here in just a moment. And Jose in California, how to sell more ads for the website. We're glad you're here. That's exactly what we're talking about. Let's talk about this last piece related to what do all these changes mean related to compensation. For medium and larger teams, as we talk about this, there has been a shift towards a more dedicated team for print versus digital. That's not always the case, but we do believe that we're exploring more of that in the recent years. In terms of a focus related to compensation and sales teams, a focus on selling bundles is very important, including putting it right on the actual rate card itself. It means that we're not just covering the rates, we're walking through the bundles. It's the same reason why grocery stores put the milk and eggs at the back of the store. You've got to walk all the way through the chips and the dips and everything else, buying all the other goodies to get your staples. The same thing happens. You tuck your bundles right into your media kit. If you'd like to see examples, we do this. We talk about this on our Tuesday academies a lot, and we share with you examples of what that actually looks like. Overall, compensation, we talk about and have done a lot of work with our clients related to the portion that is tied to salary, commission, bonus, weaving that back into print, e-newsletter, web, and giving the incentives and tying all of that together. We're also big believers in initially looking at the ratio between fixed compensation on the salary side versus the variable on the commission side. So all of this is also in flux and changing depending on your particular needs and your particular models. We'd be more than happy to take a deeper dive behind the scenes related to that. I wanted to field a question here, Jed. Kathy in New Jersey says, you know, what is the best way to get salespeople? And Kathy, you know, without speaking directly to your particular group, but broadly to all of those who are joining us here today, there's really two core ways to get the bullseye. It's like the double word Scrabble again. You take people who have been in the sector. Let's use RVs for a moment. You take those who have sold RVs, who know all the dealers, who know all the jargon, and you teach them advertising, or you take someone who has sold advertising, print, newsletter, digital, et cetera, and you teach them the RV space. Just a broad stroke for all of you. We believe it's far easier to take a salesperson to teach them the RV sector than to bring someone from the RV sector and teach them advertising and media. We truly believe that part. We have a lot. There's 9 steps to making a perfect hire. We use benchmarking tools to assure that the best salespeople are joining your team. We have very specific strategies in terms of onboarding, initial training, and then ongoing coaching and training and support. And then, of course, again, those who join our Tuesday Academy, we fold new hires right into that, and off they go. And so that's been a real wonderful part of the flagship, Jed, as you know, around here at Power Hour. Jed, we're coming right up on the top of the hour, wanting to be respectful of the time. For those of you that are joining us live, we're so delighted that you're here. We hope that this has been helpful for you. The news, the trends, the quotes, the observations. Jed and myself, living and breathing it. We're riding the wave like you are. It's a fast-moving wave. The wave keeps getting taller. The beach keeps getting closer. The rocks keep getting sharper. That's why we're here, and to help you win. In turn, you have to do the same, right, for your advertisers and your agencies. You have to be that thought leader in your particular beach. Jed and I are working off the ocean because that's how we play, and that's the work that we do. You only have to own your beach. So think about that. Do make certain you come into MediaBids. If you're working with them, you already know the magic that Jed and his team bring. If not, take the time to learn what they do, connect with them, and you'll learn the way that they rock. And then in reverse, come to our Power Hour site, powerhour.com. We've been out in business for 21 years, 2-plus decades, 3 decades of media experience. There's no problem, opportunity or challenge, too big or too small. And again, our flagship Tuesday Academy, you will positively love for advertising sales leaders. Jed, some closing words before we wrap up here.
Well, thank you. We covered a lot of ground, and I'm sure we'll come back to several of these topics in the in teleseminars, you know, to come. But thank you, everyone, for joining us, and thank you, Ernest, and we'll talk to everyone soon.
Beautiful. Take care, everybody. Make it a great day. Thanks, as always, Jed.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.